Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Kaylee Moore, a talented freelance writer that works with well-established e-commerce and SaaS companies ranging from BigCommerce to HubSpot, AT&T, and more. Based out of a small town near the capital of Illinois, Kaylee studied communications and got her career started doing public relations at the Central Illinois Food Bank, where she managed social accounts, did a lot of outreach, story pitching, and public speaking to drum up press and support for the organization. All along, Kaylee was running one of her first side businesses, a handmade jewelry e-commerce store that was at one point ranked as a top-selling shop on the Store MV platform. She landed features on popular fashion blogs and scaled with zero paid advertising. It wasn't until 2013, though, that Kaylee was getting ready to leave her PR job at the food bank, and she started working on her own content creation business, which would go on to become a source of full-time income for her. In this episode, Kaylee and I talk about how she got started as a freelance writer, taking on $25 stories for a local publication on the side of her day job, to now working with well-established brands on 4- and 5-figure deals. We cover her partnership with Paul Jarvis, where they've gone on to revamp his creative class course material and launch a co-hosted podcast together, where she breaks down everything behind the scenes for building a freelance business. We explore the ways that Kaylee generates high-quality leads for her freelance business, her best advice for landing publication columns on sites like Forbes, Entrepreneur Inc., Copy Hackers, and seriously, so much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Kaylee Moore. Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to be chatting with you finally. You're someone that I've known digitally for so long, and so it's finally happening. This is great.
It's all happening.
And it's always a blast when I get to chat with another freelance writer, so I'm pumped for this. Now, for our listeners, Kaylee, you've gotten to work with some very impressive and well-established SaaS and e-commerce companies, the likes of AT&T, HubSpot, and BigCommerce, just to name a few of the bigger, more recognizable names. But before we get into everything you're up to today, I do want to rewind the clock a little bit. Where are you originally from?
I still live where I grew up. I'm from a town called Jacksonville, Illinois, which is in the middle of Illinois, not far from the capital city of Springfield. But it's very rural. So even though I've moved around a couple times and I've lived in different cities in Illinois, I'm still very much in the heart of the Midwest.
Good for you. That's awesome. What is it that drew you back to your hometown? I'm assuming you live somewhere else for college.
I went to an in-state college, so I didn't go too far, but my family lives here, and my husband is from here. He works in a nearby town, doing a couple of different things for a large company in a town nearby, and, you know, he and I have talked a lot about potentially living somewhere else, but this area is very affordable, and it's kind of centrally located, which is nice for travel. So there are pros and cons to living here, just like anything else. But it's where I'm from, and it's very familiar to me. And like I said, it's very affordable. So definitely some nice perks that come with this zip code.
Yeah, all very good reasons. Do you have a large family based locally?
I don't. I actually have kind of a small family, but we see each other quite a bit. And so it's nice to have them nearby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very nice. Especially as you begin to, grow up and do even more adult things like start your own family.
Yeah, that's on the list somewhere.
Yes. So Kaylee, can you remember back to what your very first job was when you got started with your career?
So my first professional job after college was in PR. So I worked as the public relations person for a regional nonprofit. It was a food bank. So they were a distribution hub for local food pantries and people who, you know, hand out food to people who need it. And so that was a great experience because I got to do a lot of different things. They didn't really have a budget for marketing and advertising. So it was my job to go out and find ways to get press for them. And so I did a lot of radio shows. I did a lot of public speaking. I went to like every Kiwanis and Rotary Club in the state, if you know what those are. So I talked to a lot of people. I did like TV shows and talked to people at the newspapers and local magazines. And so it was a great way for me to get really immersed in the world of communications and marketing, I guess, at a very local level.
Yeah, that's cool. I can really kind of relate to that experience of first job being a very scrappy environment of like, mm-hmm. Hey, we don't have much as far as resources. So figure out how to get results.
Yeah, make it work.
Good way to learn.
It is. It's interesting. I mean, it forces you to be very autonomous and very creative. And if you are good at making friends and building relationships with people, I think especially in an environment where you're trying to get press or get like some sort of coverage for whatever it is that you're doing, that's a great skill. And it's a good experience to have to really figure it out and do that on your own. It's scary, yeah. But it's good.
Well, it helps a lot too when you have something that's very easy to sell or to talk about even, right? So like a food bank, my gosh, like such positive community benefits, right? That's fairly easy to go out and try and work hard to promote.
Right, absolutely. And so people, it's a feel-good story. So people are happy to have you come on and share about the cool things that you're doing and how you're helping people because they want to be part of that too. So yes, having a strong mission that resonates with people is really helpful.
Yeah, yeah. So freelancing, how long ago did you start freelancing? Was it during this work at the food bank or was it afterwards?
Yeah, so I was doing a little bit on the side while I was still working at the food bank. And so I was just kind of curious about the freelancing world and the opportunities it presented. I'm not somebody who's good at being bored. So in the evenings and on weekends, I was like kind of twiddling my thumbs a little bit, looking for something to do. I like to be efficient. I like to be busy. So I started writing for one of the local newspapers in my town. And I mean, it wasn't a gig that paid a lot of money. I think it was making like $25 a story or something, but I got to do these human interest interviews and talk to cool people in town and hear about interesting things that are going on. And then at the same time, I started doing a little bit of social media consulting too. So I had run my own e-commerce store and really figured out social media marketing from that perspective. And so I started leveraging that and asking people, hey, do you need somebody to help with your Facebook page? Or do you need somebody to manage your Twitter account? And I ended up connecting with the local PBS station who needed somebody to do that on a freelance basis. And so I started doing a little bit of that too. So in the beginning, it was a lot of dabbling. I was doing kind of dipping my toes in the water with a few different things freelance-wise to figure out what it was that I really liked. And eventually those opportunities snowballed a little bit and got me to the point where I felt comfortable transitioning from the full-time job at the PR, you know, doing PR for the food bank into freelancing full-time. And so there's, of course, a lot more backstory that goes with it, but that's kind of the short Cliff's Notes version.
Did you have, you know, when you emerged into the world of full-time freelancing, did you have a super clear focus? Like a, you know, this is my service, this is who I work for, or were you still sort of in the phase of kind of like dabbling, taking different experiments to try and like figure out what that would be?
Yeah, totally unfocused. I think I was very hungry for the opportunity to have the flexibility of freelancing. So I did a lot of different things. I said yes to a lot of different things. And like I said, I was doing social media management. I was doing some freelance writing. I was doing a little bit of website copy. I was really just saying yes to anything that came my way. And I think there's pros and cons to that approach. On one hand, it really helped me get a lot of experience with a lot of different things very quickly. At the same time, it showed me what I didn't want to do moving forward, because as I was doing all these different things, I figured out, okay, well, I don't love the social media management stuff that much, but I really like the writing. And so it helped me through experimentation figure out what I really enjoy and what I wanted to do moving forward.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you there. I have kind of a similar experience when I started freelancing, is that I felt like I learned just as much about what I didn't like doing as to what I did like doing. And also at the same time, who I liked working with, you know, everything from, from company size to like, you know, personality of the people that I was interfacing with on a more regular basis. So it's a, I would agree. Very good learning experience to just kind of have an open mind and try out a bunch of different things that you think might work out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very immersive. It's a very good way to try a lot of different things. And if you're starting out and you don't really know where you want to focus, that kind of approach I think is really effective. It's a great way to figure that out quickly.
100%. So Kaylee, you also mentioned something, you know, you teased the fact that you had an e-commerce shop at some point in time. Can you tell us what that was?
Yeah. So when I was 19, I was in college and I was putting together pieces of jewelry, like from Michael's, the craft store in my bedroom. And I just decided on Valentine's Day that I was going to open an Etsy store. And so I just did it on a whim and started adding products that were things that I had just put together on my own, things that I liked and wanted to wear. I just kind of built a store off of that premise. And so, long story short, I ended up having the store for 5 years. I got a lot of great experience from running that business. It actually grew to the point where I was making quite a bit of money while I was in college and working a job, and like had two steady flows of income flowing into my college dorm room at one point. But it was great because I got all of this experience with e-commerce and with marketing. I did some very early work with influencer partnerships. So that was very interesting and also helped me down the road when I went to go for interviews for my first full-time job. These were all things that I could talk about and say, you know, I didn't just go to college and do the courses and maybe work a job on the side, but I actually built this business that's been very successful. And, you know, here's this track record that I can show you about. Here's what I can do with very little. And I think that that was very illustrative to the interviews that I went in after I was graduating college and looking for a full-time job. I know for a fact that that was a big differentiator for me, and that was a huge competitive advantage as far as setting me apart from the pile of applicants.
100%. I think that's really important because, you know, you're coming out of school. A lot of people at this point in time have, you know, a fairly blank LinkedIn profile to show, right? Like they have internships maybe that they had in during college, but, you know, having some sort of side project like this that you can illustrate to potential employers, like, hey, I'm a go-getter. These are the results that I did for myself in my, you know, evenings and weekends. Like this is what I can do. So I think that's a hugely important thing for people that are in school or, you know, early on in their careers.
Yeah. And it's so easy now too. I mean, you can have an online store set up in a couple hours. And So I think if you have the ambition to try something like that, why not? Like at least give it a whirl, use it as an experiment.
And that store is now closed down?
So I had the store for 5 years. I eventually ended up selling it to someone else because when I started freelancing full-time, it was kind of the Ron Swanson approach. Like, don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. And so I really wanted to whole-ass the freelancing. And I knew that I could not divide my attention between two businesses and do both well. And so I sold the jewelry business. And I have to say, I do kind of miss the e-commerce world and having a store of my own sometimes. I really find myself wondering if I want to get into that again. And maybe one day I will. But for me, when I was starting the freelance career, I knew I needed to have laser focus on this one thing moving forward. And I didn't want to let the quality drop off for that e-commerce brand that I've worked so hard to build up. So I just decided to shut her down.
Jeez, that must have been a tough decision.
It was. But I was also very excited at the time about this new opportunity with freelancing and the opportunity to work from home and set my own schedule. So for me, the perks of really leaning into that outweighed the opportunities presented by the e-commerce business. So it just made sense at the time.
Fair enough. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, this bridging this gap. When you begin freelancing full-time, you know, you mentioned at first that your first couple of articles were, you know, you were earning maybe $25 per story. By now, you know, you've gone in a very different direction. You're charging much more outwardly from what my impression is, at least, as kind of a more premium SaaS freelance writer that works with e-commerce brands, SaaS companies. So talk to us about how you get from $25 an article to something that's much more premium priced. What starts to happen in between once you begin freelancing full time?
I think the biggest shift that happened for me in my career was the decision to specialize and to really become a subject matter expert on e-commerce. So essentially it's e-commerce platforms. So like Shopify, BigCommerce, and this is kind of my niche. That's what I'm trying to explain right now. So the e-commerce platforms and then the software that integrates with those platforms. So like email marketing tools, loyalty programs, subscription billing, all those integrations that tie in with those platforms. And so for me, it wasn't until I leaned into that very specific world and could keep building upon this foundational knowledge that I already had to really become an expert that I was able to raise rates and be seen as an authority within that world. And again, like those two things kind of feed off of each other. So the smarter I got about this specific subject matter and the more results too that I produce for clients and could leverage in conversations about value and pricing and things like that, it just kind of went back and forth. So I would say it probably took me 3 or 4 years to really get to a point of being a sought out person for this type of writing. But it was a very strategic move. And a lot of that didn't happen until I took Paul Jarvis's creative class, which very much nudged me and pushed me to find that niche and to be a specialist rather than a generalist. And so that for me, I think was the big turning point, was taking that course.
And I'm curious, you know, I do have some questions for you related to your work with Paul, but before we get there, I'm curious to hear, you know, do you still charge by the article or have you kind of like repositioned your offer into being something else? And I'm thinking about our relatively, you know, maybe beginner freelancers that are listening here who are maybe still charging by the word or by the article. Is there a better way to position your services and package things?
So for me, I specialize in blog content, and so scope is kind of tricky sometimes. And the easiest way I found to price those projects is still by word. So I've never been somebody who prices by hour. It's always by word. And then there's a conversation that goes along with that pricing that says, okay, you're not just paying per word. You're paying for X, Y, and Z, which is the things like the experience I have, the network of people that I can reach out to and get quotes from, a round of edits, like the subject matter expertise that means I'm going to be able to produce this quicker. I'm not learning things from scratch. So it's a lot of positioning, and it's not ever just, hey, here's the amount of words that I'm going to write for you and that's it. It's always a larger conversation of here's what all I'm going to bring to this table in this partnership and in this collaboration of you and I working together. And here's how we're going to scope it. It's very much positioned like that.
I like that. That's more of a partnership than, you know, the hired gun approach.
Right, right.
That's smart. So, you know, backing up to your work with Paul, how did you make the transition from student in his course to helping him with kind of like revamp all of his course content? I know you guys kind of collaborated together to update his course, Creative Class.
Yes. So I took the course in version one back in 2014, I believe. And about 2 years later, he sent out an email to all of the existing students and said, hey, I'm going to be reworking the course. What feedback do you have on how I can make it better? And so for me, I instantly wrote back and was like, oh, you need X, Y, and Z, and I can help you make those things because I'm a writer and I know exactly what you need. I can help you do this. And so it was a lot of me just raising my hand and being like, hey, I have an idea and I can help you with it, and here's how. And so by framing it like that and making it almost a no-brainer for him, I instantly got an email back that was like, yes, how about you come on as a partner? Let's do this together. We'll make it a collaboration and work together on version two. You have a lot of great ideas. And so it was very much just that one email of me reaching out and saying, hey, here are the things that you need and here's why, and let me help you do them with my expertise that I have. And so I think that example is very much how my career has gotten to the point it is now. It's a lot of raising my hand and saying, I know how to do this thing. You need to do X, Y, and Z, and I can do those things for you. And here's the outcome that you're going to get from it. And so I think that for other freelancers who are listening, that's a scary thing, right? That's a scary thing to speak up like that and to say, I have an idea. Do you like it? But for me, that's been a great opportunity provider. It's been a door opener. And for this course, which I now co-teach with him, and we've had four or five rounds of the course being open. We have almost 2,500 students now. It's, if I wouldn't have done that, I never would have been able to help teach all of those people and share the things that I know through that course. So I don't know, long story short, it was very much just me going out on the limb.
I love that though. I mean, it was very genuine too. You weren't reaching out to like pitch him on something as much as you were trying to help as a starting point. And then, you know, his initial reaction was like, hey, let's do this together. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it was so simple, really. I never expected him to come back and ask me to come on as a partner. I thought it was going to be more of a conversation around, okay, well, let's get on the phone. Let's talk through these ideas and then I'll go to work. But he was like, no, I mean, you told me exactly how to solve the problem. So solve the problem for me. Let's do it. Which is great. Like that's how I get work today too. So it's very effective.
How did that partnership work with you guys? From like was it a revenue share model? Did he pay you as kind of a consultant on top of like some sort of like revenue share? What did that look like?
Yeah. So it's always been a revenue share. It's just a percentage breakdown. And so we also do like live events, which there's no fees associated with those. We always just share in the revenue of the course, but we work pretty well as a team. We're both very much like cross items off the to-do list type of people, just get it done. And so we work together really well. And that revenue sharing model has been just a really simple way to distribute work and responsibilities and kind of keep the financial side of things very clear. And Paul has a lot of great expertise as far as the technical side of building out a course, which I don't. So I don't have a standalone course of my own. And it's been, I think, a very complementary partnership in that he brings skills to the tables that I don't necessarily have. And then there are things that I can bring to the equation that maybe he needs help with. And so for me, that's just been a really great working relationship.
I like that. Having someone that complements your skills very well. So for some of our other, you know, freelance writers, content marketers out there listening today, what would your advice be in terms of how you should go about landing quality clients? Can you still find good gigs through marketplace websites, or are you doing something else today?
So for me, the best leads come from referrals. And I think that that's pretty common sense because those are the folks who are already green-lighted. Somebody else has basically vetted you for the other person. And so, again, that kind of speaks to the importance of making friends, networking, getting to know people. And, you know, I always heard, even when I was at the food bank, people say, oh, we have to build relationships. And I was honestly always like, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean when you say build relationships? That seems so ambiguous. And for me, it's really just been more of finding people who align with what you're interested in, what you do, what you like. And Twitter has been a great tool for that for me. And then having an ongoing conversation with them, like literally just interacting with them on Twitter. And then down the road, they know who you are and what you do. So that opens doors to conversations about opportunities or work or speaking gigs, things like that. So building relationships, even if you live in the middle of nowhere, like I do, is possible and simpler than ever before because of the internet. So if you use email to like reach out to somebody and say, hey, let's have a Skype coffee date today. I would love to hear about what you're working on for 20 minutes or so. Or you go back and forth with somebody on Twitter and you know, comment on the things that they're writing about or sharing about. That's a really simple way to do that ambiguous build relationships thing. And that's been really effective for me.
I love it. No excuses. Make it happen.
Yes. Just participate. You know, it's called social media. Be social.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I noticed in doing my research ahead of this interview was that you also rank number one in organic Google searches for the term SaaS freelance writer. Does that drive actual leads for you or just
interest? That's a good question. And I know that ranking fluctuates. There's two other writers. I think Elise is one of them. She's been on your show before.
They've both been on my show.
Oh, they've both been on your show. Okay. Yes, yes. And they're both wonderful, lovely, smart people. I really, really like both of them. It's funny. I think it's a maybe a name and like skill reinforcement, but as far as leads and actual translation of opportunities, it's just not great. It's not great. So it does drive interest through the contact form on my website, but almost never are they a good fit, either because of the budget or what they want and need. For me, I would say 90 to 95% of the work that I do end up doing is through referrals and through people within the SaaS community who know my name and know my services and like the quality of work that I do. And so they refer me out to other people working in the industry. And that's where I get most of my jobs from.
Yeah, that's much more sustainable long-term anyway. I kind of similarly to you, at least I used to, I haven't checked this ranking in a while, but I used to rank number one for, I think, content marketing consultant.
Oh.
And that drove a ton of very low quality leads. Some really clear like qualifications like, hey, don't fill out this form unless you meet, you know, criteria 1, 2, 3.
Right.
But I did have one really, really good client come out of it that I worked with for a year and a half and, you know, totaled up to maybe close to 6 figures.
Oh, wow.
That one client. So I'm kind of torn on this myself. Is it worth, you know, investing all the time and the, you know, SEO, link building, things like that in order to get those pages to rank? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that's a great point. Sometimes you do get that one lead that turns out being a really wonderful, perfect fit client. And it's all about having the form fields that qualify, hey, don't waste your time and don't waste mine if you don't meet X, Y, and Z. Like, just don't waste either of our time. Here's what you need to know. That's the secret to weeding those folks out.
Qualify, qualify, qualify.
Yes.
So Kaylee, you've contributed to some pretty awesome publications, Inc., Forbes, Entrepreneur, Copy Hackers. Maybe zeroing in on just one of those major sites, would you mind walking us through your story? Because I know this varies for every single person that contributes to these publications, but can you tell us about what your story was like landing a column on one of these sites?
Yeah, so almost all of them, maybe all of them, have again happened because of Twitter. And so for me, Twitter has been a way to build relationships. Again, that vague phrase, build relationships with people working at those places or publications, and having that established rapport with either an editor or like Joanna Weeb, who runs the site, because they know me from those conversations. When I do reach out with a more formal ask or a pitch, there's something there to grab onto. They know me, that we have this existing back and forth conversation. It's not a cold ask. It's not a cold pitch. It's very much warm. And it's just a lot more genuine, I guess, because I'm not coming to them and, you know, stalking them online and then making this big ask. It's very much like, hey, I've been interested in what you do for a long time. I have some ideas that might be helpful for you. Here's what I would love to help you with. And so I think approaching it from that perspective of wanting to be friends with these people and genuinely caring about the things that they're doing and sharing, rather than just approaching it from the cold pitching angle of, this is what I need, here's why you should hire me. It's just a lot more effective. And the success rate has been almost 100%.
I love that. I'm sensing a theme here.
Yes.
You know, do your homework.
Yes.
Be a good person. Build real relationships. Don't be transactional.
Yes.
This is great.
Yes. I think that's the secret. That's such a nice way to sum it up, is like, don't approach it from the standpoint of a transaction where you are just trying to get something from the other person, because people have a pretty good BS meter when it comes to that thing. And they can see right through what you're doing. And so if you're not genuine and you come into those conversations with the ask, you know, floating above your head, they're going to see it. And so it's just not effective. You've got to go the other way.
Agreed. All right. Well, Kaylee, my last question for you, what's been the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your business? And this can be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
I've got two. So the first one is obviously Creative Class, which of course feels spammy coming from me now that I co-teach the course. But when I was getting started, like I said, that taking that course and having that nudge to really niche down and focus on a specific subject matter area and type of work is what totally changed my freelance business and made it, for me, I think, long-term sustainable. So that was a huge, major improvement in my operational side of my business and just kind of the strategy behind what I was doing. It's not an expensive course, but I think the return on investment for it has been incredible. And then the other thing is just a tool. Like, it's my desk chair. So I spent a lot of money on the very expensive Herman Miller Aeron desk chair. But for me, like, that's been a great thing to have because I spend so much time sitting in that chair. It saved me so much back pain. And I don't know, just without it before, I was miserable all the time. I had this crappy IKEA desk chair. And now that I have this one, I feel like a new person. So that's been a great investment for me.
Sometimes it's the seemingly little things that can boost your quality of life so much.
Yes. And yeah, it's a ton of money to spend on something trivial like a chair. But when you spend that much time sitting in it, it really, I think, is important. Almost as important as the computer you use.
Absolutely.
Do you have a fancy chair?
Oh my gosh. I actually don't, which is kind of funny. So I need to reevaluate my priorities here.
I'm always curious to hear about what other people sit on. Yeah.
I love it. All right. Well, Kaylee, I'm going to respect your time here. Thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening where they can go to learn more about you and everything that you're up to?
Yes. My website is kayleemoore.com. And I, like I said, I spend a lot of time on Twitter. My username there is Kaylee F. That first name is kind of difficult to spell, so you might have to go to the show notes for this. But yes, both of those places are a great place to find me.
Beautiful. All right. Well, Kaylee, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.